Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's BudSmart Roundtable Series webinar. My name is Ashley Robinson, and I'm the editor of BudSmart. Today, I'll be serving as your host for this webinar. Today's theme is harvest conditions and the problems they can cause for potato storage. I'd like to take a minute to thank BASF and McCain for partnering with us on this Roundtable Series webinar. Today's presenters are Ron Howard, who is a plant pathologist with RJH Ag Research Solutions Limited, and Stephen Johnson, a crop specialist and extension professor at the University of Maine. In today's webinar, you'll learn about how harvest conditions can contribute to diseases in storage, what you can do when storing your potatoes to keep them in the best condition, what diseases your potatoes may face in storage, and how to handle potato storage diseases. During the presentation, you'll likely have some questions for our speakers. Please type these into the chat box at any time during the webinar, and we'll address them during the question and answer session after the presentations. Today's webinar is being recorded and will be made available at BudSmart.com following this live event. Our first presenter is Ron Howard. Ron is a plant pathologist with RJH Ag Research Solutions Limited. He spent 39 years with Alberta Agriculture and Rural Development, where he was a research and extension plant pathologist at the Crop Diversification Center South in Brooks. Ron carried out diagnostic, surveillance, research, and extension work on potato diseases for most of his career. His work on storage diseases included evaluating post-harvest fungicides for efficacy, screening potato varieties for resistance, and determining the effectiveness of different methods for cleaning and disinfecting potato storages and equipment contaminated with bacterial and fungal pathogens. After retirement from the Alberta government in 2014 and through his company, Ron has remained involved in a variety of collaborative research, extension, and crop disease surveillance projects. Take it away, please, Ron.
Okay, thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. Certainly appreciate the opportunity to talk to you today about harvest conditions and the problems they're causing for potato storage. And I appreciate BudSmart inviting me to the webinar today. I have a number of acknowledgements I'd like to present here. In the course of gathering the information to present in the webinar, I talked to a number of potato industry specialists and plant pathologists across Western Canada to get their ideas on potato harvest conditions and storage problems that they might anticipate, and their names are given here in my first slide. These folks work for provincial and federal agencies and potato industry organizations in the provinces of British Columbia, Alberta, and Manitoba. And I appreciate very much their information, and I've incorporated it into this webinar. For those who may be from outside of Canada, when I talk about Western Canada perspective, which is what I'll be presenting today, I'm referring to the provinces of British Columbia, Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. Here's an outline on what I'd like to cover today. We'll talk a little bit at the outset about the current status of the potato harvest in Western Canada, what the disease situation was in potato fields in the Prairie Provinces in BC in 2020, because that's often where storage diseases originate, is in the field. We'll spend most of our time talking about the major storage diseases of potatoes that we see here in Western Canada and some of the key strategies for managing these diseases. And then, if time permits, we'll end off with some questions. So in general, the potato harvest, the growing season, first of all, in Western Canada this year has been reasonably favorable for potato production. We had hot, dry conditions on the southern prairies towards the latter part of the growing season, which has stressed some of our potato crops. But most of the early maturing varieties have been dug, and the harvesting of the main crop varieties is just nicely underway. Quality's generally been pretty good, but there have been reports of some abnormalities such as secondary sprouting and knobbiness, which we usually associate with heat stress. Some of the extension specialists I've spoken to are concerned about the dry soil conditions that could result in lumps, and of course that can lead to tuber bruising during digging and predispose them to a number of infectious diseases. In addition, if we're bringing in warm tubers, they're going to need to be cooled to remove that field heat. The disease situation in our potato fields in the West, we just have some preliminary reports at this point. Most of them, the detailed reports will come later in the fall, but preliminary reports suggesting disease levels were average to below average in most areas. Hot, dry conditions on the southern prairies have suppressed some of the foliar and soil-borne diseases, especially the ones that rely on rainfall and high humidity to develop and spread. And in my home province of Alberta, we've received some excess precipitation up in the central Alberta areas, and that has led to a few disease occurrences. So in terms of the meat and potatoes of our presentation today, we're going to be talking about some major potato storage diseases, and I've grouped these into two groups, and those are the infectious diseases caused by pathogens and some of the non-infectious diseases and disorders that are basically physiological. And those, the infectious diseases occur, will include bacterial soft rot and blackleg, fusarium dry rot, late blight and pink rot, powdery scab and pythium leek, and I've grouped some of these together because they affect the potatoes in similar ways and have similar biologies. And then for the non-infectious disorders, we'll look at bruising and shattering and chilling and freezing injury. So let's start with bacterial soft rot and blackleg. These diseases are caused by the bacterial genus Pectobacterium, and the species are Pectobacterium keratobrum causing soft rot and Pectobacterium atroceptacum causing blackleg. And the soft rot, the first one is probably the most common. It affects many different plant species, whereas blackleg is usually restricted to potatoes. And these diseases often occur together, sometimes even on the same plant in the same field. And they're both fairly common in our potato growing areas. Both of these diseases can cause seed piece decay in the spring and, of course, tuber rot in the field and storage. And we even see situations where they will kill the stems or even the whole plants in the field. Now, this slide shows some typical symptoms of Pectobacterium diseases on potatoes. And you can see in the picture on the upper left, there's a wound there that has provided an entry point for the soft rot bacteria to invade the tuber. And once that happens, the enzymes that the bacteria produce macerate the tissue, and it often begins to ooze water out of the points of attack. Blackleg, we'll often see a dark discoloration in the tubers as well as the soft rotting. Fusarium dry rot is the next disease I'd like to talk about, and this perhaps our most common storage disease on potatoes in Western Canada. It's part of a complex of three main types of fusarium diseases that we see, starting with seed piece decay in the spring, and then there's fusarium wilt during the summer, and then dry rot, which is our post-harvest disease. There's over a dozen fusarium species that cause dry rot and these associated diseases, but in case of storage dry rot, Fusarium sambucinum is our main species of concern. Fusarium species can attack the potato plants in the field and in storage, so they're all a year-round problem. The fungus Fusarium reproduces by spores, and these are spread long distances in air, soil, and on seed tubers by field operations. And when potatoes are moved around, trucked around, the disease can spread that way as well. Our fusarium diseases in Western Canada are generally more serious in our storage diseases, and especially in potatoes that are stored for a long period of time. For example, seed potatoes and some of the processing varieties that aren't processed until on into the spring. This plate shows some of the typical symptoms of fusarium on potatoes. In the upper left, we see some potato seed pieces that have a surface infection and dry rot caused by fusarium. And then down in the two pictures on the bottom, we see the typical shriveling and collapse of the tuber tissues as a result of fusarium invasion, the creation of cracks. And when we cut those tubers in half, we'll often see the presence of discoloration and fungal mycelium on the surface as well as in cavities within the tubers themselves. Late blight and pink rot, the next set of diseases I'd like to talk about, and they're caused by a species of the genus Phytophthora. Phytophthora infestans causes late blight, and pink rot is caused by Phytophthora erythroceptica. Late blight is a sporadic disease in the prairie region. It's more common in the more humid to higher rainfall areas, for example, in British Columbia. And it's generally when we get rainy growing seasons is when we'll see late blight appear. So we need that abundant rainfall, or in the case of irrigated production areas in Western Canada, heavy irrigation in the spring and summer can sometimes promote infection, especially if you have cull piles in the area or have accidentally planted some infected seed. Pink rot is a tuber disease. It's more aggressive than late blight in the tubers, and it's more resistant to drought and cold. And while freezing tubers, we find, will often kill late blight, that's not necessarily the case for pink rot. Here's a slide showing some of the typical symptoms of late blight. We see the cinnamon brown coloration in the two tubers on the upper part of the plate. And late blight is essentially a dry rot, but with pink rot, which you see in the bottom picture, the tubers, when they're cut in cross-section, are often quite watery and soft, and they'll develop this pink coloration, hence the name pink rot. Moving on to powdery scab, this is a disease caused by a fungus-like pathogen called Spongiospora subterranea. And this is a disease that most people would consider to be a field disease, but we have seen it predisposing potatoes to other pathogens and becoming facilitating storage disease development. So the powdery scab pathogen can survive for long periods in soil as spores. It forms very durable, thick-walled spores that can survive adverse conditions. It is not related to common scab, which is probably more prevalent than powdery scab in Western Canada. The Spongiospora infection causes galls to form on the roots of potatoes and skin lesions on tubers. It's favored by cool, moist condition as opposed to common scab, which likes the warmer, drier conditions. Powdery scab forms galls on the roots and skin lesions on the tuber surfaces. And it's favored by cool, wet conditions. In addition to the outright damage it causes itself, it also can vector potato mop top virus, which is a tuber necrosis virus that causes discolorations and dead areas in the tubers. Powdery scab lesions are much more prone to invasion by soft rot bacteria and other pathogens than our tubers with common scab. And this is why we see it as a major predisposing factor in some of our storage rot issues. This is a picture in the upper left corner shows the typical dark colored raised lesions of powdery scab, and these may contain thousands of very textured spores. The lower right shows the root galls that may be seen on potato plants in the field. Pythium leek, this is the last of the diseases I wanted to discuss. It's caused by Pythium ultimum, a water mold, very common in agricultural soils and has a very broad host range, causing seed decay, seedling blight, and a number of issues in rotational crops with potatoes. Because it's a water mold, it needs abundant soil moisture in order to cause disease. And in potatoes, the disease leek affects only the tubers, but there is a seed piece decay issue sometimes with Pythium as well. This disease progresses rapidly in the field and storage. It likes excess field heat and harvested tubers to really get going, and it can spread very rapidly in stored potatoes. Here's the typical symptoms of Pythium leek. You'll see the brownish discoloration on the interior of the tuber, and that area is bounded by a dark brown line usually. And when the tubers are cut and squeezed, the water exudes from the cut surfaces, and that's why it's called leek. So this disease, as I mentioned, rapidly develops in tubers that are warm when they're dug, and if you can't dissipate that field heat, leek is often an issue that you have to contend with. So let's talk about, with each of these storage diseases I've described so far, there are sets of management strategies that are aimed at their prevention or control. And you can access more detailed information than I'll be presenting today from various online and print resources that are available from state and provincial extension personnel, for example, private consultants, and the like. But today what I'm going to do is talk in general terms about some of the practices that should be considered for managing potato storage diseases here in Western Canada and beyond. And some of these need to be applied during the harvest period, while others, or even before harvest, while others are more pertinent to the storage period itself. So starting with harvesting, we want to make sure that we've desiccated our vines, that allows the skins to set up. We want to delay harvesting until that happens and until pulp temperatures have cooled down a bit, ideally between 7 to 10 Celsius or 45 to 50 Fahrenheit. If the soil is dry and you have irrigation, I'd certainly recommend you consider a pre-harvest watering to minimize lumps. And fewer lumps, of course, will help avoid bruising the tubers during harvesting and subsequent handling both in and out of storage. We'd like to see potato storages cleaned and disinfected, as well as the diggers and handling equipment before they're used. And as the tubers are coming into storage, to make sure we grade out damaged or decaying tubers. Some that can be done sometimes on the harvest or certainly prior to going into storage, and that'll reduce the load of inoculum that's going into storage. Recently harvested tubers should be allowed to heal the wounds that build up that skin barrier. That's the main inhibits invasion by a lot of these pathogens if we have a good skin set. So keeping the tubers in storage, but 12 degrees centigrade for 7 to 10 days will promote wound healing. And then we want to drop the storage temperatures down, keep them as low as possible. If you have wet tubers in storage, you definitely are going to have to increase the air circulation to dry those tubers out. If you suspect you may have some issues with particular storage rots, there may be post-harvest fungicides that are available, and they can be applied to the tubers going into storage, or in some cases even fogged into the potato piles in storage. And lowering the temperature and humidity if rot develops in storage is essential to bringing it to a halt. Now, we talked about in the opening slides about the physiological problems that we deal with, the bruising and chilling and freezing injury. And we've talked about bruising in the context of harvest already. So let's look at chilling and freezing injury. Last year, we had snowfall and very cold temperatures in late September, early October, and a lot of our potatoes in Western Canada were affected by that. So growers were dealing with chilling and freezing injury. And those damage generally occurs between 0 and 3 Celsius. And of course, for chilling and freezing injury is below that. The chilled tissue in potatoes usually turns a gray or black color and usually doesn't have an odor to it unless it's had secondary infections. Occasionally, you'll see a reddish brown or mahogany coloration. The vascular tissue, that bundle of tissue just beneath the skin a few millimeters is very susceptible to chilling. And sometimes that's where you'll see the discoloration happening first. When ice crystals form in frozen cells, the cells' walls may rupture and the affected areas appear rubbery and watery. Sometimes there's a dark line that separates healthy from affected tissue. And of course, these frozen tissues are very susceptible to breakdown. Here's a picture of some chilling and freezing injury on potatoes. And you can see the sunken lesions in the upper left picture and on the upper right that indicate that these tubers have been exposed to chilling or freezing. And then when you cut the tubers in cross-section, that you will often see the discoloration. There may be leakage of moisture in those potatoes, and that can favor bacterial soft rot especially. So to manage chilling and freezing injury really starts in the spring with ensuring that you have properly formed hills that provides that insulating blanket to help protect the tubers from freezing if that's a risk. Obviously, harvest your tubers before severe frosts. And if you're digging in cold weather, trucking, you obviously need to protect the tubers against freezing in transit with tarps or enclosed trailers. If you're digging chilled or slightly frozen tubers, it's important that you wait until they've warmed up. If they're dug cold, the bruising typically is a lot worse than if they're allowed to warm up. Field frosted or chilled tubers need to be held in storage for 2 to 3 weeks at warmer temperatures to allow for wound healing and to dry the surfaces down. And then, of course, if there's any tubers with visible breakdown, those need to be removed, graded out. And that's my presentation this morning. Thank you very much for listening, and we'll look forward to receiving your questions later on in this webinar.
Thank you, Ron, for your presentation. Hello, it's Ashley Robinson, editor of Spud Smart. I'm so sorry for the earlier technical difficulties we experienced. Our next presenter is Stephen Johnson, who is an extension professor and extension potato specialist with the University of Maine, where he has been employed for the past 32 years. Steve has a PhD from the University of Florida, a master's degree from the University of Maine at Honorable, and a bachelor's degree from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, all in plant pathology. His responsibilities in Maine are potato diseases with potato light blight, occupying a major portion of his time. When the crop is not in the field, potato storage disorders are a focus of his efforts. Take it away, please, Stephen.
All right, well, thank you, Ashley, and I appreciate the invite to be part of this webinar. I echo a lot of what Ron said as far as the kudos and the thanks for setting this together. It's kind of easy just to show up and talk, not have to do all the background work. But it's going to seem as though Ron and I spoke ahead of time. I've never met Ron, and our talks will pretty much dovetail because I'm not really going to be talking about the diseases. I'm going to be talking about the storage and how to handle the building by basically classifying the diseases into wet or dry rots, which are pretty obvious when looking at them. And so, initially, the number one rule that you really have to understand is a storage is not a hospital. Your potatoes are not going to get better. If they go in there sick, they're going to come out sicker. You know, at most likely, the best case scenario, you're going to get out what you put in. And so, understanding that you need to do your management in the field. As a storage pathologist, I don't believe that diseases happen in storage. They happen in the field and they get brought into storage. They happen when they're being loaded into storage when during that occurs. There can be some spread in storage, but realistically, the time to prevent them is in the field. And I think some of that was brought up earlier there. And these are some storages. It's been a few years in Maine since we've seen storages, but this one did have potatoes in there. They didn't make it. We don't have any storages that I know of. I know our process error. I hope I said that right, Canadians. Our process error hasn't bought anything out of a computer control storage for 2 decades and such. And some of the quality and the breakdown issues that were very common become almost a non-issue as we go into our more modern storage. But we're also putting in a lot farther. These tiny buildings like this, we don't see anymore. A generation ago, some of the potatoes may come in at what we put in for a day. We put in 30 minutes now. So we bring in a lot more field heat. We move potatoes faster. We bang them around a little bit. And so at that point, it's important to keep that in mind, that that is not the same storage and handling that we've always had. But the bottom line is they don't get healthier in the storage. So let's get them healthy going in. The primary objective of the storage manager is to provide an environment that will maintain quality through the storage season. And that storage season may be a month and it may be 12 months. And again, there's a different approach if you're going to be harvesting potatoes in September and delivering them in August, as opposed to harvesting in September and delivering in December. These potatoes are living. They give off carbon dioxide. They take in oxygen. They release heat and moisture, and they can cause a building to overheat. They can cause a building to start rotting because excess moisture. When diseases occur, I've measured as high as 135 degrees in Fahrenheit in potato storage. It was, the biology was happening that hot that it went in, and I almost fell in and drowned in that one. And so I carry a rope and a partner with me because of that. So the idea is to ventilate. You need to remove the heat and you need to remove the moisture from the potatoes. And you do that through ventilation. And I don't mean opening the doors. I mean turning on the fans. When I started, the new storages had 10 feet between the culverts. We went down to 8 feet. We're down to 6 feet now. And we know the square buildings are going to hold the potatoes better than Quonsets, just because of the difference in headspace in the areas. And so a lot of things have changed, but the ventilation is still more or less the same between the buildings and such. We're trying to control the temperature, trying to control the humidity of the potatoes. If the carbon dioxide is not removed from processing potatoes, a darkening of the fries can occur. Right now, virtually every storage that I go in has a CO2 monitored, trying to keep it below specific levels to keep processing potatoes where they need to be. Seed growers have recognized the value in that as well, where the seed comes out healthier when it doesn't have excess CO2 built up into it. And this has changed some of the management and seed storages in U.S. as well as other countries as well. You can dry wet potatoes with a ventilation system. You can add humidity, and generally the humidity needs to be added early in the season. And I know I go around and I turn down the stopcocks on the spinning humidifiers, because 100% humidity in wet floors is different than 100% humidity in dry floors. Getting the vapor into the air is one thing without having it too wet, so you start condensing onto the potatoes, and that's when you start getting bacterial and or fungal development. So you can add moisture, you can remove moisture from the system, and generally the fans are used. Originally, storages were built so that the fan, they were fanned up to be able to cool down the building. And you have massive fan capacity to cool down an enormous building. And then when you need to ventilate it, the thing kicks on and blows huge amount of air as well, too. Well, at that point, then they now there's maybe two fans or three fans because you don't need the same amount of ventilation when you're in static pressure because you're not cooling the potatoes. You're just trying to circulate the air through them and gone to variable speed controllers that save a lot of energy and are very efficient. And sometimes they need some adjustment because you CO2 monitoring because they may not get the CO2 off as well for. But again, trying to minimize the weight loss, the shrink loss, not enough moisture or too much wind right after harvest is going to cause excess shrink in the potatoes. And that leads to problems down the road, whether they be pressure bruises, the fusarium entry into there, or simply selling less of a crop. And the potatoes just aren't that attractive to the end buyer. For the ventilation, generally, looking to be able to add a gallon of water per about 1,000 cubic feet per minute of airflow. So you need to have that. And again, sometimes the swamp coolers, they don't have enough humidity when they pull it down. An additional spinning humidifier might be needed at that period, but not later on in the season. Ventilation capacity, storage design is quite an art. It is constantly improving and getting better. We're looking for a static pressure of 1.25 inches water column, an air velocity of about 1,000 feet per minute. And we don't need a 3.5-foot diameter or a meter diameter fan to do that. We need that fan to cool it down. That's all we have, we've got to slow the fan down through a variable speed controller to get that static pressure. So the different end uses require different amounts of airflow. I have some numbers down here. Seed at 0.8, table at 0.8 cubic feet per minute per hundredweight. French fries at 1 and chips at 1.5. I don't think there's any problem going more than that, higher than that. And I think that probably most people would, if I was designing storage, I would design it for more than that airflow going through there, simply because you can always back off that, but you can't add more to it realistically. You can back off by changing your fan speed or size. For initial storage conditions, when your crop is brought into the storage, the use about a 2 to 3% lower set point than the pulp temperature for continuous airflow. If you're bringing potatoes in at 15, set the your temperature sensors at 15 to be able to pull in that in. And pulling too cold of air too quickly can cause condensation on the tubers. And this leads to lots and lots of problems. The continuous air supply is maybe the doors open or the louvers wide open, depends on the situation. I would prefer to have the doors shut and the louvers open so that we have better control of the air coming in. For curing is going to be 2 weeks from the time you start the temperature drop, and that can be when you're starting to load the storage. It just depends on how big and how long it takes you to load the storage. But you're looking to hold them at 10 to 13 degrees at high humidity for 2 weeks. And with this, you're moving air all the time through there. And at that point, you're pulling off carbon dioxide because the oxygen is needed to heal and suberize the potatoes off. And at this point, it's a race. The idea is to get the potato an opportunity to heal itself before the fusarium is going to come in and attack it. And it does a pretty good job if you give it the right conditions. I have a fear this year in the western part of Canada and Maine where I am, is that we're going to not be able to supply enough humidity. This is reminiscent of 1995 when we had the driest record that I've been here. We could not get enough humidity to suberize the potatoes, and we had a lot of fusarium that came in because we could not get enough moisture into the air because it's so dry. Even the point of soaking the concrete floors and adding humidity, the potatoes came in so dry and has been so dry that they just couldn't get moisture on them enough to suberize. They look like they did, but when the stores were opening, there was a lot of fusarium. So the importance of the curing conditions, trying to get the humidity, because that is key. The potatoes will suberize at different temperatures, but this temperature is ideal. It just takes a lot longer at a cooler temperature. Looking to cool down, 1 to 2 degrees C per week for the seed. Processing a half a degree in that range and table a little bit more, because you're too quick a pull down can shock the potatoes. It will can lead to condensate as well. And again, this is where you simply set your computer panel to start dropping the temperature to where you want. Long cool down can be a little faster if you're going to go there, but generally speaking, this takes 30 days. If you're going to drop 10 degrees in temperature, it's going to take you 10 weeks, 2 months, 2.5 months to get there at a degree a week. And so you need projecting that ahead. That with a cooling air or refrigeration, it's possible to drop it very, very quickly, but that's not really advantageous for the potatoes or anything else. Sometimes the potatoes are not ideal, and sometimes the conditions are not ideal. And that's really what storage management is. The easy part is growing the potatoes. The hard part is storing it. The really hard part is storing them when the conditions aren't right or the potatoes are not right. So getting into some different conditions, looking at really good harvesting conditions. Ron talked about adequate soil moisture for cushioning. We're not having lumps. We're getting soil all the way up through the primary, possibly into the secondary, being separated out there. So we have a good group of potatoes going through. This minimizing the amount of damage and banging that occurs going through there. Cooling air is available in a nice cool night. And we're handling conditions to reduce bruise. External environmental conditions, we're looking for cooling air available, no excessive heat, no excessive cold. We generally have these conditions, but when we don't is when we really run into problems and have actually had to turn on refrigeration units in some areas trying to get the potatoes cool down, because if there's not external cooling, they'll sit there and they'll continue to heat up, because the heat of respiration of the potatoes will add a lot of heat to the pile. Storage problem is if the crop handling or the harvest conditions aren't right, and this can be your initial storage conditions, which is really your first 10 to 30 days, 15 to 25 days in that range, or your cool down and curing conditions after that, your external conditions aren't right. And that's when storage problems can occur. And being able to predict or recognize that we're going to have problems can alter some management, or possibly work with a processor handler or inform the customers that, you know, it's not going to be the best year. You're going to do what you can do, and you're trying to apply your best information, but they're not going to be as perfect as everybody would like them. For a cool, 10 to 15 degrees Fahrenheit and wet harvest, what do you do? Run the fans continuously without humidity, because if you're cool and wet, you've got plenty of humidity in the mud with the potatoes, in the potatoes, and in the air. The curing temperature is right around what you're bringing the potatoes in for. So at that point, you can, if you have air, you just bring it in. And one thing that does occur is that if this is very humid air outside, if you've managed to dry off some of the mud and soil that's come in with the potatoes, it may be drier in the building. And at that point, you may shut the building down, so you're not bringing in external air. You're just moving air through there. But pretty much run the fans continually. Cold and wet harvest. And this happens more than I want to talk about. You know, Ron talked about some snow in late September. We're just hoping we don't get it in August some years. And we have a regular number of years that we get snow during harvest, and we'll have half the hill frozen. We'll freeze down 3 inches, and that's a whole lot of problems that develop through there. If you see conditions like this, you can expect you're going to have some low temperature injury. You're going to have some low temperature sweetening on some of the processing potatoes, and you're going to have frozen or chilled potatoes coming in, along with clods that are frozen, and they become very sharp and cut at that point. But again, no humidity, run the fans continually. Once the tubers dry off, you're going to have to add some humidity at that point, because you're going to need a lot of curing, good optimal curing in this, because you're going to expect to bring in more damaged potatoes with this. Talked about pink rot. Some fields have pink rot in them as a harvest growing and storage. Our storages can handle 5% late blight, I feel, pretty handily. 1% pink rot is going to be tough. Pink rot is a problem that spreads rapidly, especially with the warm potatoes. And when they're moved around, it will spread tuber to tuber. And there are some phosphorus acid approaches that I worked with developing a program and an applicator in Maine has pretty much eliminated our storage breakdowns, and that's been great. The best thing to do with pink rot in the fields is let them delay harvest, let them rot in the field. When they do come in, they're going to be splattering all over the lags and coming up. And again, the cure of the potatoes, cooler than you want them, but not cold. And if they're quite bad, rapid cooling really bring the temperature down fast. However, if these are going into the table stock or ware market, you're going to want to warm them up for at least a day and a half to 2 days before you put them in a bag, because they may have some breakdown that'll occur, and it's better to pull them out on the packing line than have it go into the plastic bags. Pythium soft rot, again, this is a wet rot that comes in. You've got to cool potatoes cold below 10, which means the airflow has to be lower than 10. And if you've got Pythium or soft rot in the field, you should have known it all the way along. We get Pythium, and generally Pythium is a problem when we're harvesting too warm. If we harvest over, I'm guessing about Fahrenheit to centigrade, over 25 or 28 degrees, we will get Pythium. We will get leek, because that's too warm for our area to harvest them. That's the time to shut down, and the potatoes come in too warm. At this end, however, the soft rot is best to let them sit as long as you can and break down in the field before they come into storage, because it's easier to deal with them at that point than in the storage, because they will spread. And pretty much it doesn't matter what the problem is in a storage. If a storage goes down, a soft rot that finishes it. We've got a high percentage of soft rot loading or in early stages of the department, early stages of storages. You're looking for basically zero humidity and lots of air. And we don't have information to support the use of disinfectants or bactericides to the ventilation. We can't seem to get them to show anything through the humidification system. I don't recommend it, and we don't do this. We will use hotspot fans. We will put fans with tarps over. There may be a load they got rained on. You thought you might have got away with it, and you're not getting away with it. Those are fairly easy to target either by looking at the pile or with a temperature, infrared temperature gun. And these hotspot fans, which is about a third horse fan, generally like on an inner tube or something, a tarp around to pull heat out of it. And it can do a pretty good job, but it's going to be on there for a good 3 weeks or more. If you've got soft rot after curing, it's time to really pull the bottom out of the temperature and use supplemental air. This might be those hotspot fans. It might be booster fans in the plenums across the area where there is a problem. But if you've got a high percentage after curing, it's time to move that bin any way possible, because it may not make 60 days. And they will unload with a payloader much faster than they go in with a bin piler. So I've talked about measuring and what to do. And the question is, well, where do you measure? And so I've spent time going through in looking at the three-dimensionality of a storage and deciding where to measure. And I have a series of charts from there. And this is the humidity from the top, which is the pink, the middle, which is the baby blue, I guess, and the red, which is the bottom. And you can see generally that the middle has the most stable RH in the middle of the pile. And you should expect that because it's got potatoes above and below it. The bottom has the most fluctuation because that's where the dry air or the drier air comes from. And the top is pretty much affected by the humidity put in through the system. The top tends to be more less dynamic in its changes than the bottom, because the humidity and the air have gone through the potatoes. But the bottom will go up and down. And from these spikes that you see here, this is where the ventilation fans were turned on and off, or the humidity was turned on and off. You can see the humidity was turned off in parts of November, and it went very down. We're down to an 80%. 75% of the bottom part of the pile, and that is going to have pressure boost. Those three instances through here cause in that area some shrink and additional problems later in the season, because they were the air was too dry coming in. This is the difference on a percentage differences between the top, middle, and the bottom. And the bottom is a pretty good place to measure the temperature, not as good to measure the humidity. That you can see that the yellow on the bottom is fairly stable, and the top and the middle are affected by the air that is being pulled off. And so the bottom gives you a stable temperature. It's not always accurate for the entire pile. At this point, the top pile can be up to 5 or 6% difference in temperature than the bottom. And again, it's going to be warmer as a rule, because the heat's going to rise and go through it. This is early season. They're still getting heat out of the potatoes. And so if the measurements were taken on top and too much faith putting on those describing the entire pile at that point, probably would have cranked up the air and lowered the temperature trying to get more air through. But realistically, most of the pile looks pretty good. It's just at the top of it when the heat's gone through the pile, and increasing the airflow leads to other problems later on. Again, this is similar percentage differences on the relative humidity. The top, middle, and the bottom, they run pretty well. The middle and the bottom on the RH, the top is what's fluctuating, because that's where the humidity goes through the pile. So despite where they're placed in the storage, and they're often placed there by the storage construction and not necessarily placed by a storage manager or some study, I like them in the plenum low, not necessarily in the by the fans or where the humidity comes in. If they're going through the plenum, and it's usually a plenum in the middle or the far end away from the fan to do the measurements. Again, this is mid-season, and you can see the top is fairly stable, and the middle is fairly stable as well too on that. But they're reading about 2% difference. This is very acceptable to me. A 2% difference in between the top and the middle of a plenum, or top and middle of a 30-foot potato pile, to me is a good solid pile. It's at a stable temperature. The humidity is just a little bit different as it goes through that. So later on, any one of these sensors in or around the pile give an accurate and consistent reading across the pile. This is a little picture across the whole season going through there, that you can see there's the back, the middle, and the back, the middle is where it is on the plenum. And the back of the plenum is near where the humidity comes off and the fans are, and that's where you can see a lot more wild temperature going off, because it's blowing and cooling over there. And you know, the bottom line is having more than one sensor and not just leaving them where the construction company put them is an okay thing to move those. Think about it. Go on and take a look at your storage, and pretty much you're walking around, you put enough time in and out of the storage, you have a pretty good idea what it looks like. You get some sensors and some measurements to help verify them. And again, this is pile humidity. Again, the bottom is going to tends to be a little higher. My bottom was about 6 feet up from the bottom of the plenum. I had a sensor buried into there, and the bottom, the front, and this is the back. And you see the humidity in the back near the fan was always a little lower because the air was moving or the humidity wasn't moving. And again, once they move on toward the season, they came close together. But relying on one sensor in one area can run into particular issues. So, my take home message, you know, is to ventilate, but do it properly. And one sensor is not good enough for me. You have a lot of money in a potato storage, and I'm looking for some of these sensors that you can buy that do temperature and relative humidity from Omega or some companies like that, that are $50 to $100 a piece, and they can record them as well. Just you plug the USB into the computer and it spits it out. You can take a look at what is going, move them around. At that point, you're getting an idea of what your storage is, and you do that for a while, and you'll get a handle on where you need to measure to take a accurate description of what the pile looks like. You need to manage the storage to the market. The markets aren't all the same, and some of them are more tolerant of problems than others. And as always, you manage the parameters you can manage. You manage around those you can't. You can't change the outside weather, but you can change the inside weather in the storage to compensate for it. It's been 5 seconds short of 30 minutes for me. I appreciate the invite, and I guess I'm over now. Actually, someone should cut in and tell me I'm done.
Thanks, Stephen. I'd now like to do a short question and answer session. If you have a question for either of our presenters that you haven't typed in yet into the box, please type it into the chat box now. And I'll get going with the questions. So the first one is, I think this was from during Ron's presentation, is powdery scab a quarantine disease in your country? So he was meaning in Canada.
No.
Thank you. Oh, sorry.
No, it's not a quarantine disease.
Thank you, Ron. Our next question is, I think it was from, again, during your presentation, Ron. What is pulp temperature?
Temperature of the tuber.
Thank you. And the next question is excess moisture the common condition for all those pathogens' origin? And I'm thinking that was during Ron's presentation.
Yeah, excess moisture is probably the most common parameter for a lot of those infectious diseases. They have spore stages that require moisture either for spores to germinate or for swimming spore stages of the pathogen to find the host. So yes, moisture is and moderate temperatures are probably the two main factors.
Thank you. Tuber temperature 7°C at harvest is not on the lower side for processing potatoes?
It is for us. I mean, 7 degrees is colder than we're going to store them. And generally, our tuber temperature is going to be warmer than our air temperature because the soil is still holding moisture. But if our tuber pulp temperature is coming in at 7 degrees, it's time to get them in a hurry, because it's going to continue to get lower, at least in the northeastern part of Canada and U.S. We have a proper winter.
Right.
Thank you. And this one will be going to Ron. How much Dickia is present in Alberta?
Dickia soft rot has been found very rarely in Canada. There have been a few cases of it in eastern growing areas. To my knowledge, Dickia soft rot has not been found in the field here yet in western Canada. But as I mentioned earlier, a lot of the disease surveys and so on are being carried out during the summer months. We don't hear the results until later on. But I haven't seen any reports of Dickia soft rot, verified reports of it yet in Western Canada.
Stephen, would you like to add anything to that?
Dickia has been low for the past couple of years because we've been quite dry. We are seeing some Pectobacterium parmatarii is becoming quite a serious problem, and it will take down a storage where Dickia will not. They tend to be kissing cousins, and they are often found together. So right now, our conditions for most of the places have been such that we haven't seen a lot of either any soft rot or blackleg. It's there. We just aren't seeing the symptoms.
Thank you. Our next question is, which post-harvest chemicals are allowed to inhibit pathogen growth? How about you start, Stephen?
TBZ, if I said that right, is thiabenazole. We have a lot, virtually complete resistance of sambucinum to thiabenazole. I took it out of our recommendations a long time ago. It can work, but it has to be put on absolutely perfectly all the way through, and it will slow it slows the growth down. It doesn't inhibit it as you think. It's not a resistance that people think about, like ridamel resistance or susceptibility. It slows its growth down on that. But generally speaking, there are some other materials newer materials that have come in, Stadium, I believe, and some others.
Right, I could add probably the most commonly used storage treatment here in Western Canada is Storox, which is a material that's usually fogged into the storage, and it's used to often in an attempt to rescue storages that are going down for one reason or another, or where you anticipate some storage issues because of poor harvest conditions. So it is probably the most commonly used product. And it's a broad spectrum material that's both fungicidal and bactericidal. And while it's not necessarily a miracle cure, it is widely used and has helped, I think, to arrest some issues that storage decays and so on that get going unexpectedly on producers. And there are fungicides such as Stadium and others that are used. We have had widespread resistance to thiabendazole for a number of years, and so it is not as widely used. But there are other products, of course, that are used during the growing season. As I mentioned in my presentation, we often have to, and as Stephen said, storages aren't hospitals. You really want to bring the healthiest tubers into storage as you can. And so there's a much wider arsenal of products available for use in the field, from seed piece decay treatments, in-furrow treatments, foliar treatments, and so on. And that's where most of the fungicide management is applied, is in the growing season. Once it gets into storage, your options are definitely more limited. And we can't forget as well about cleaning and disinfecting storages. And again, there's an array of products there that can be used for cleaning and disinfecting. And that's another area that we like to emphasize here.
I mentioned phosphorus acid. We virtually don't have storage in Maine that's not treated with it to reduce the tuber-to-tuber spread of pink rot and late blight.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you, guys. How serious of a problem is silver scurf in Canada, and how do you manage this? I'll let you first answer, Ron.
Okay, silver scurf is a widespread problem in potatoes. It's a cosmetic problem. It doesn't cause decay of the tubers. It's a skin disease that detracts from market acceptability. Again, it's one where we want to start out with healthy seed or use seed piece treatments that could suppress silver scurf. And then some of the storage treatments that I mentioned, like the Storox, some have used that product. And managing the storage temperature and humidity, because the silver scurf pathogen will grow out onto the surface of the skin, form spores, and those are distributed through the storage with the air handling system. So it's a disease that you need to control both in the field and in storage if it is prevalent in your area. And it seems that the white skin potatoes and maybe some of the red skin potatoes are more prone to it. And it does cause difficulties. It makes the skin thicker. So it's when you're trying to peel potatoes as well, it can be an issue there. So yes, silver scurf is a major storage issue here, but not as prevalent as some of the ones that I mentioned in my presentation.
Stephen, would you like to add anything to that?
Yes, silver scurf, the pathogen needs cyclical wetting and drying to release the spores, and then they need to condensate on the tubers to go and reinfect. And so what's the worst case scenario that a storage person did there, they were basically running lots of humidity and then shutting it off for 2 weeks and running humidity and shutting it off for after 7 to 8 days. What they were doing is they were drying the off, they're releasing the spores, they put a lot of humidity on, they got the tubers damp again, the pathogen infected them. And a week or two later, it went through the cycle again. And we have actually gone and changed some of our unloading practices, because on some of the larger storages, if they were opened up and the potatoes were disturbed every week during the from January on, what that did is that stirred up all of the pathogen and got them going, and then it spread everywhere else. And so getting the storage in and out, the whole bin, rather than just popping it open and getting a couple loads out every day or every other day, that has helped as well too, because it's really a spore release, spore infection, you know, primary and secondary spread.
Thank you. Our next question is, if harvesting table potatoes with a pulp temperature of about 8 degrees Celsius is advisable to warm them up for drying / healing, or hold them at that temperature for longer to allow healing? Stephen, how about you answer this one first?
If you're harvesting at pulp temperature of 8, by the end of the day, you're going to be 8.5 to 9. Just through the heat of respiration, rattling them around, moving them, that's going to increase the respiration. You stack them in a stack and you're going to be up to 9 or 10. I mean, your pulp temperature generally continues to increase. And at 8 degrees, you probably have cooling air available. You're going to be working to even hold them at 8 at that point. So I would say that I would not be warming them up. I would be moving air to, and depends on the outside air. I would just set the temperature, the plums right about the same temperature as those, that 8 degrees.
Ron, do you have anything you would like
to add? Yeah, I don't have anything to add to Stephen's response.
Thank you. Okay, our final question, it looks like. Do you employ any sensors to detect early development of soft rots in storage? Either you like to take it away?
Well, to be honest, the best sensor we have is your nose. And we don't flood the building with temperature sensors trying to find a spot, you know, that might be different. Certainly when the pile are leveled off within a certain amount of time after they've been loaded, if there starts to be dips in those piles, you know that you've got a soft rot problem that's shrinking. And at that point, we can use temperature sensing guns, infrared sensing guns, to look for temperature differences in the pile. But as far as using the temperature sensors as a early detection method for soft rots, I don't know of any. Good question, though.
Right, I'd agree that the nose and the appearance of the pile probably the two most two best ways to recognize soft rot. A number of years ago, there was a plant pathologist in Quebec who actually worked on sampling the air in potato storages and putting those air samples through a gas chromatograph looking for profiles of volatile fatty acids and other orders that may indicate the presence of a pathogen. And it worked in part, but it's it was very the number of volatiles that are out there are very complex, and sorting them out and separating them was very time consuming. And perhaps someday there'll be an electronic sniffer or sensor that we can use in potato storages that will discriminate in this way. But to my knowledge, that is that technology isn't in the marketplace yet.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all the time we have for today. I'd like to thank our speakers, Ron and Stephen, for joining us today.
It's been a blast. It's easier than working.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I would once again like to thank our sponsors, BASF and McCain, for making this webinar possible. And a big thank you also goes out to everyone for participating. I hope you have found this information valuable. Again, a recording of this webinar will be made available on spudsmart.com. Thanks again, and we hope you have a wonderful day.